children, time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul to keep. Come, my children, time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul to keep.
Welcome to the Enlightened Medicine Show with Dr. Valerie Olmsted, the holographic physician. And our show is brought to you by starlights.com. That's starlights.com. And also by enlightenedmedicinecenter.com. And our guest tonight, this is really special, and I'm really excited to introduce to you Dr. Robert Gilbert. And I've got to tell you, listeners, I just finished a couple classes with Dr. Gilbert, and it was just nothing short of amazing. So I've asked him to come on and explain some of the classes that they have to offer at the Vesica Institute, and I think you're really going to be amazed at some of the information that he has. So welcome to the show, Dr. Gilbert.
Thank you very much, Dr. Valerie. Nice to be with you.
This is so exciting. I mean, I got back here and I was talking to one of my friends. I said, "You have got to go take some classes from this guy."
Well, thank you.
He said, "Okay, I will. You tell me when to go and I'll be there." So that's a great response to have, I think. And, you know, he checked out the site and he said, "Well, this looks pretty interesting." So to start with, why don't you go ahead and give us your bio, you know, tell us what are you all about and how did you get to where you're at now and, you know, all that pertinent, interesting stuff.
Okay. Well, basically, I'm the director of the Vesica Institute for Holistic Studies. We're located in the mountains of Asheville, North Carolina. And I've been working in this field for probably a little over 30 years. It really began when I was made an instructor in the U.S. Marine Corps in the nuclear, biological, and chemical warfare, defense, and survival field. And that was back in 1982. And I was in Japan for several years doing that work. And that introduced me to a lot of modern technologies and, in many cases, how they're being misapplied for very destructive purposes. But it really made me aware of the type of toxicity of the environments we live in today when we're dealing with the chemical, biological, and radiological problems that everyone encounters today. And that led to a few different avenues that we now have as part of the trainings that we do at the Vesica Institute today. So one of the sidelights of that we can get into in more detail, if you like, is that I began to compare the knowledge in the ancient world in classical spiritual traditions having to do with what we call today sacred geometry, or the patterns of creation, the blueprints behind everything that's in physical manifestation, and the way there was a one-to-one connection between what was known and taught in these hidden circles in the ancient world, having to do with the way that things are constructed and their functions in the world, and what had been empirically rediscovered in modern times through modern technology. Many of the modern discoveries that we have in chemistry and biology are really rediscoveries of things taught thousands of years ago in these classical traditions. Another aspect of it is what I'm today calling holistic healthy homes, which is an approach to make the knowledge that we've built up in modern times about how to deal with modern toxic challenges of the environment that we're living in today, again, the types of biological and chemical and radiation dangers that we're exposed to, how to present that to people in a way that's empowering, that's not fear-based, but is rather based on how to understand all of these different types of toxic challenges in a way that is simplified, easily understandable, and where there are very practical things that you can do to protect your own health and the health of your loved ones. Another aspect coming out of this was the comparative study of many different spiritual traditions around the world, and really being interested in creating a system through which people could, in a short amount of time, really get the essence of the knowledge held in these classical spiritual traditions And so this is part of what we offer today with what we're calling the spiritual science work, and does have a strong link to the work of Rudolf Steiner in Germany and Austria, but also includes a lot of the information from many different traditions. And again, the idea is to make the access to spiritual information and techniques that's often put into a framework where it's very complex or difficult to understand, or it's hard to get the information, and to put it so that you can see how all these different traditions are offering pieces of a puzzle that are really quite easily understandable when it's presented in a clear and concise manner. And then the final piece is related to the courses that you just took with me in Asheville recently, and that is the biogeometry work that I teach. My teacher that I learned it from and who I teach under the auspices of for biogeometry is Dr. Ibrahim Karim from Cairo, Egypt. And biogeometry is really nature's design language. It really teaches the practical ways that we can use shape, sound, color, motion, angle, proportion, all of these different natural energetic systems in a very practical way to analyze the energetic state of any person, place, or thing, and to create optimal states of energy balance in any of these types of systems.
Yeah, and you know, I have to tell you, too, since I got back, of course, I've been busy. Everybody wants to know what kind of difference can this make for me. And we are mm-hmm. going to do a show just on biogeometry because we can't cover everything that you do in an hour. And I want to do the overview of what you have to offer there, because I don't want people to wait. You know, I want them to get an idea of where to go for their spiritual teachings, because, you know, it's very difficult to weed out the charlatans from the real teachers, and I recognize you as a real teacher, and so I'm very happy to recommend you to the listening audience. And listeners, I got to tell you, you know, biogeometry is that's the bomb diggity, as they say. You know, it's just amazing stuff. And I mean, I went over to a friend's house, and he has a pyramid over his bed. And I said, you know, I wonder if Dr. Fred Bell had actually known about this and put the lines in his pyramids. And son of a gun, he didn't. Mm-hmm. And I went, wow. And so I took out my little virtual cone pendulum, and I went around and I, you know, mapped where a couple of lines were in his bedroom. And he said, well, look at that. He said, those lines are crossing right where I sleep. Mm. I said, I suspected that once I learned this stuff. And I said, wow, this is pretty interesting. So I said, okay, now draw the lines on here and see what happens. And we drew the lines, and all of a sudden we got the beautiful gold in the center there and took away the negative energies. And he was like, wow, that fast? I said, yeah, it's that fast. It's instant. And I thought, this is the coolest thing I've ever learned.
<You know>? Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, it's just been amazing. And so, of course, everybody wants me to do this. And I'm like, well, first of all, I'm not a practitioner yet. I want to be. But I can totally understand, because it's making such a difference in my life and in the lives of my friends that I've told about it, because just with a few simple things, of course, I'm just addressing the bed situation now, but mm-hmm. just a few simple things, and it's like, wow, you sleep better. And you have energy when you get up in the morning, and, you know, it's like, wow, there is hope after all. And as a person who has exhausted all of the medical ways, whether conventional or natural, in my own case, I've been going, okay, I give up. You know, I've searched out, you know, what the heck is going on with this body, because it's really weird. And all I had to do was, you know, place these patterns correctly, and all of a sudden, you know, I woke up and I was clear-headed, and my eyes weren't blurry, and I didn't have any aches and pains, and the swelling was going down. I was like, wow, you know, that's pretty amazing stuff. So and you know, the other thing I really appreciate, too, about the way that you teach is you include the esoteric stuff. And for me, that's really important. I need to know, where did this stuff all start, no matter what I'm talking about? Where did it start? You know, who came up with this? How did they come up with it? And, you know, why are we doing something this way instead of that way? And because you include that information in your classes, it's extremely valuable, because you're also, even when you're teaching something like geometry, you're actually teaching people how to live in the spiritual sense, you know, how to be the spiritual human. And that's so valuable and so difficult to find these days. So that's why I wanted you to talk about the other things that you do at the Vesica Institute, because it's just fascinating. So let's start out with, how about the essential teachings and practices of spiritual science? That's a good place to start.
Okay, thank you. So the essential teachings and practices of spiritual science is a course that we now actually offer online that anyone can take if they go to our website. And it's been put together in such a way that it provides a essential foundation in core concepts and practices in spiritual development. And there is a strong basis of it in the work of Rudolf Steiner, who was a great Rosicrucian teacher from Central Europe, who also worked with the concept of a modern spiritual science. But we want to bring in a lot of other perspectives from other traditions. So particularly we bring in a lot from the Indian Vedic tradition and aspects from the Chinese Taoist traditions and other traditions from around the world, wherever it's appropriate, because there really are a very clear set of fundamental concepts and practices in spiritual development that can sometimes get lost in the morass of information we have today.
Mm-hmm.
One way that I sometimes refer to it is that we have a kind of a blessing and a curse in the modern day, that we have an access today to incredible amounts of spiritual information from all over the world in a way that's really unprecedented. Never before in human recorded history have we had so much open access to so much information from so many different locations. But the curse of it is that it can be really hard to plow through the huge amount of information and to make something really practical out of it and to sort the wheat from the chaff with all the different material that's available today.
Yeah.
And so what we really did with this particular online course is to put it together so that there's streaming videos, there's downloadable audio, there's downloadable handouts that go step by step from the most fundamental concepts and then build forward into more and more advanced work, and really allows a person to get, I think, a very solid foundation under their feet where they can start recognizing these key elements from any tradition they're exposed to and start doing some of the most fundamental practices that will actually lead to higher states of consciousness, higher development of the energy body, and an expansion of our awareness into the spiritual world in a way that is solid and grounded and does not become illusory or full of all types of ego inflation and things that happen today. One of the problems that has come in with the spiritual teachings today is that since we have this historical situation that so much spiritual information was kept hidden for so long, that it was possible to, in some ways, manipulate this kind of hidden spiritual knowledge so that it could lead to a person developing a type of ego inflation and becoming very self-important, and these kind of cult-like atmospheres where people become the guru and everyone gives their power over to them. And although we're moving into something very different, I think, today in the metaphysical world, there still are holdovers of that. And one of the things that we try to bring out in the course and in the courses that we'll be following up on this first course that we now have available are some of the classical patterns that you see. One of the first things that happens to a person on the path of spiritual initiation is that as they begin to develop an understanding of real spiritual realities and develop their first level of spiritual skills and abilities, there's always going to be a temptation to use that either to manipulate other people that do not have that knowledge or to become extremely self-important and puffed up about how special one is, and then you become the little guru and have your own little group.
Mm-hmm,
and that's really an identifiable trial, an identifiable temptation that actually comes on the spiritual path along with many other ones. But if we don't know what those particular temptations will be, what those particular classical trials of spiritual initiation are, it's much easier to fall prey to them. And so one thing we try to do in this course is to give people just an overview of how things fit together, and not in a way that we are teaching it so that you have to believe what we're telling you or it's done in any type of very authoritative manner, but rather that hopefully it makes sense. It just becomes self-evident once you learn it that way, that it has become self-evident that it must be that way. And so it's not a matter of having to believe somebody else's story, but that things fall in place so logically that it just makes sense and becomes something that one owns, something that is natural to one. And so
yeah.
Right now what we're doing is we have, again, this online class that anybody can sign up for it. It's got 5 separate classes that one can do at one's own pace online. And then we also have live classes where we go deeper into other esoteric material and more advanced practices. We're going to keep on adding more to the online series, so it's going to be a progressive series of courses. And I've been very fortunate that we've received so much positive reinforcement for this class from so many people that have taken it. I think there is a real hunger today to get spiritual information in a way that is practical and applicable and doesn't fall into a lot of these things I mentioned before, where people get really ego-inflated about the work they're doing, but to really make the work as clear and concise as possible so that in the least amount of time, people can get the most essential elements and really use them to apply to help themselves in their own lives.
Yeah, the reason I find this so important is because having been around in the metaphysical world for quite some time myself, I mean, I was blessed. You know, I went through a lot of the trials, and I was blessed to have a really excellent teacher. And, you know, thank God for that, because I can tell you I have watched people fall by the wayside by the thousands in their search on this spiritual quest, and the ego trips them up every time. And, you know,
right.
And I've been watching the people around just going flipping nuts. In fact, I had a friend of mine that just went off the deep end, and it was just such a shock to me that he went so far off the deep end and started calling me all kinds of names. And you know, as a physician, I look at the way this guy responded to me, and I went, okay, he's doing projection. This is classic projection. He's telling me all about himself. And, you know, thank God I've got discernment, and I could see what was going on. I can't help him other than to pray for him. But it's one of those things where I see so much of this going on. And I see these people, you know, the minute they start giving themselves titles, I just kind of go, uh-oh. It's like,
yeah,
oh,
yeah.
No, you know, like I'm the keeper of this and I'm the gatekeeper of that. And I'm like, oh, boy, all right, here we go. And I try to gently guide them away from that. And, you know, and sometimes the ego has gotten such control of the person that there's just no way. You can't save them, you know, and they just go off the deep end and do some horrendous things. And, you know, I've just seen too much of this, and, you know, people think that they're right. They really think they're right. And, I mean, crazy stuff. If you're in your rational mind, you look at these people and you go, what the hell's wrong with people? You know, I mean,
right.
I just heard a story the other night. This friend of mine was building an addition on his house, and the woman who owns the house next door called the police on him and said, you've got to stop this right away. He can't be building an addition. He's blocking my view. Now, you know, mind you, there's no view. It's just a street with houses on it, you know. Nothing to look at but somebody else's house. And the guy says, you know, first of all, I own a construction company. And, you know, I own my own other company. And so he had all his permits and everything else in order. And she kept coming over and trying to insist that, you know, he couldn't build that addition there because she didn't approve it. And I mean, you know, I look at this stuff and I go, wow, people are so far out. Now, that's the main mundane version of it, you know, but the whole spiritual version of it, you know, is all this you know, grand names and, you know, grand officialdom type things. And, you know, I just see it happening all around, and I can't help but think if people would just go to somebody like you, that puts all this stuff down in the order and says, watch out for this. I mean, that's the whole point of a teacher. You know, it's like look over the student, make sure that they don't make these stupid mistakes, you know, that can be
right.
devastating to their soul. And just, you know, guide them along gently. They, you know, it's not like you tell them what to do, but it's more, you know, here's the pitfalls. And, you know, here's the rewards if you can get past those pitfalls, and here's how you do it. And, you know, for anybody that, as they say, has the eyes to see and the ears to listen, you know, this is a much better way to go. And that's one reason why I'm so excited that you're out there teaching this stuff, because it's hard to find a really good teacher. And, well, you know, I've seen lots of them. Being in Sedona, I've seen tons of false teachers come along, and I've seen them all take dive, and I've seen the harm that they've done to their students. And, you know, all I can do is warn people and, you know, just say, you know, there's certain things you look out for. So, yeah, very important stuff. So, and people keep asking me, where do I go learn this stuff that you know? And I'm like, I don't know. I picked it all up through life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was lucky to have a couple good teachers along the way and a couple really horrendous teachers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the bad ones teach you just as well as the good ones if you're smart enough to pull yourself out of it.
Yeah, the school of hard knocks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I've had both, you know, and I much prefer the good teachers. But people keep asking me, where do I learn this? And they don't want to devote a lifetime to it, they think. You know, and so
right.
For five classes, that's doable. That's doable for anybody.
We really tried to make it as accessible as possible so that I really have found that if people get the clear contextual information that they need in the most concise and straightforward form possible, then they can be left free to make their own choices, but they have enough information to make an informed choice. Because if you're not given enough information about the context of what you're working with to begin with, then you really can't make an informed choice. And so our modern freedom really depends on having contextual information. And that's very important today in the spiritual realm because, again, there's so much different fragments of information available. They don't always add up to something that's really clear and coherent. And the most important aspects of it are not always the ones that are the most highlighted in all the different fads that come through the spiritual, metaphysical world today. And
oh, yeah.
So we really have tried to focus in the online class in a way that people can get the most fundamental pieces right from the beginning. And from that context, you can start evaluating the things that you're exposed to and make a free will choice, but it's really on an informed basis. Now, the deeper part of this is that because people don't always have a clear context for evaluating a spiritual path that's healthy or information that they're exposed to, it's not uncommon that as people begin to open up to the reality that we live in a world that is surrounded by spiritual beings and spiritual realities, that can sometimes be a bit destabilizing for people. That's very different from the way that we are educated in our modern Western education, that everything is just dead and mechanical.
Yeah.
And once you begin to actually directly perceive through activated spiritual organs the human energy field, to perceive actual spiritual beings that interact and affect us all the time, then that really requires a very solid foundation has been developed in the person. And so there's a lot of techniques today that open up people's organs of perceptions very quickly, but it doesn't necessarily give them the stability to be able to handle that opening in a way that's going to be actually helpful for them.
Exactly. And it can actually harm them.
Yes, very much so. So in classical times, there was always a lot of attention given to very fundamental practices, very fundamental concepts, so that a person has a very stable base. You have to have a very stable base in your own consciousness, in your own self-awareness, so that when you begin to open up to direct perception of non-physical realities, that's something that you can then use in a constructive way with that solid base instead of just overwhelming your common sense, as can sometimes happen today. There's a wonderful statement by the Rosicrucian teacher Rudolf Steiner where he said, you know, developing spiritual perception is somewhat like having a type of controlled psychosis. You start perceiving all of these invisible realities around you, and you're going to have a very stable base to deal with that. And one of the first things that you have to develop is non-reactivity. If you have a sensationalistic approach to things, if you're easily excitable, if you have a tendency to have grandiose ideas about oneself, then all those things are going to become greatly inflated very, very quickly.
Yeah.
So it's really the most fundamental practices that a person needs to develop. And with that stable base, you can then go to very, very high levels of developing direct perception of non-physical realities. And I think that as the human race as a whole, we are at the point of really crossing that threshold now. We're really at that point of needing to develop a new spiritual science, where the holistic understanding of who and what we are in the midst of these spiritual realities around us all the time, in association with all the discoveries we've made about how to master the physical world, those two need to come together seamlessly. Otherwise, there's a kind of a psychological split for people between this spiritual aspect of life and this physical, materialistic aspect of life. And when that split is present, then spiritual work will tend to take people away from more practical applications, take them away from a grounded approach to spirituality. But I think there is a way, and we really try to approach it in these courses, that we can bring together the spirit and the science in a way that they come together in the way they actually exist, which is as a seamless whole. And when people can begin to see that as something self-evident, I just see time and time again, there's like something relaxes in a person. There's a kind of tension that people hold when there's this split between, well, is the spiritual reality idea real, or is it just the material reality? And once you begin to see how the two fit together as a unified whole that really makes sense, there's something that really opens up in people where they can relax at a deeper level into themselves and begin to live in a spiritual way in the physical world in a way that's much more empowered.
Yeah, well, I totally agree. I mean, you know, for myself, which is the only thing I can base it on, really, you know, having seen things from a young age and knowing that I was seeing things that other people weren't seeing, you know, I had tons of people trying to convince me I didn't see that. You know? And I'd go, what are you talking about? I'm looking at it right now. You know, and of course, back in the day, you know, when I was a kid, they would just cart you off to the institution, you know, at that point.
Right, right.
Luckily, my parents were too busy, so they didn't bother with that. But I know as I came through life and I would see more things, I'd have, every once in a while, somebody would say, oh, I wish I could see the things that you see. And I'd say, no, you probably don't.
Mm-hmm.
Because you would react in such a horrified manner that it might unhinge you. And
right.
I saw what happened when I was in high school. LSD came in, you know, because I was a child of the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the flower power and the LSD and all that kind of stuff. And there were a couple of kids in my high school who dropped acid, and that's it. They checked out. And something else came into their bodies. And, you know, I don't know what happened to them, of course, after, you know, several years of being out of high school. Who knows? They're probably still there. But it was really scary to see this happen. And I often wondered about that. It wasn't until I was in my 20s or 30s that I suddenly realized, oh, they're not used to seeing those things. And so if they saw this stuff and they thought it was real,
right,
and they couldn't get back to what they thought was really real, then of course they're going to get unhinged. And, you know, they didn't have their protections built up. And mm-hmm. they didn't have that stable base. They didn't have the guides or the angels or whatever in the higher dimensions to help them. You know, lucky for me, I've always had, you know, somebody there to help me. So,
right, right.
I had a lot of strange things happen in my life, and I still do. And, you know, now it's gotten to a different level because, you know, you get more responsibility with each level that you go up. And more tests, and, you know, I just laugh when people say, oh, I'll be so glad when I'm at this level because then there won't be any more challenges. I just laugh hysterically and say, no, the challenges get bigger. It'd be kind of boring if you didn't have any challenges, you know.
I do think that's a common naive assumption that somehow you get to this point where everything becomes just somehow effortless and a dance through the park rather than the classical concepts, which is that there are necessary trials that one goes through to be able to develop new skills and new abilities, and that it's a matter of really understanding those and getting out of any reactivity to them, but nonetheless engaging with it and not thinking it's necessarily going to be effortless.
Yeah, because, you know, you grow up. It's like anything else in life. You get more challenges as you show more capability and more responsibility as you are more capable as well and start to see and feel, you know, what's going on with other people, which can be painful. You know, I went through that phase of great pain. I couldn't have anybody touch me for a while because it was so painful. And, you know, the minute they touched me, I knew everything about them. I knew their secrets. I knew their fears. I knew it all in less than a second. And I tried to explain to people, please don't touch me because I don't want to know your deepest, darkest secrets and your big fears. I really don't.
Right.
I don't want to know, you know, how difficult life is for you. And mainly because, you know, I have news for you. It's going to get worse. Yeah. It's going to get harder and harder. But it's okay because, you know, pretty soon it won't bother you. But, you know, it's that type of stuff where you have to learn through experience. But it would have helped me if I had had some kind of a roadmap to say, okay, you know, this is going to come up, and then that's going to come up, and here's what you do. So I had to learn the hard way. But I did have, you know, spiritual guides on the other side that would come in, and, you know, if I really asked sincerely, they might give me a half an answer or something and let me find out the rest. So it's one of effort. And, you know, I always tell people to be able to get to that point where you can look at things happening and just go, wow, that's interesting. I wonder what that means. That takes a lot. You know, it's not a walk in the park. You don't roll out of bed one day and instantly you can do this. So, you know, I've been looking for years, you know, to try to figure out, where do I send people when they're asking me how do they become more? And, you know, it's just a constant quest, I think, for knowledge. We're all seeking that further bend. You know, we want to go around the bend and see what's next. Makes it more interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. So one thing we try to do with the work we offer at Vesica, in taking this overview from many, many different traditions and what are the most vital pieces that they all learned over time and that they taught to their own initiates so that they would have a roadmap. You know, there are particular pieces that are very important, like the particular practices that one does. So, like, there's a model that we give in this first Essential Teachings and Practices course that's linked to the work of Rudolf Steiner. But we then grow it to a larger extent and add in these pieces from other traditions that fit seamlessly into that model so that, for example, in Steiner's model, of course, you have all the different energy centers in the body. Like we think of them today as chakras taken from the Indian concept. Mm-hmm. And one of the most important chakras, of course, is the heart chakra. Well, the heart chakra has a certain number of what they would say in the East lotus petals, or particular aspects of that chakra, mm-hmm. and that there are particular meditations that are linked to every one of those petals to fully activate the heart chakra. And some of these meditations are ones that are absolutely fundamental for anyone on a spiritual path, and they'll be taught in multiple traditions. You'll find them in Hinduism, you'll find them in Buddhism, you'll find them in Middle Eastern traditions, you'll find them in Rosicrucianism, but they're things like to first become self-aware and begin to examine the content of your own thought life, the content of your own feeling life, the content of your own will impulses, and the activation you get before you take an action, so that you begin to illuminate all these aspects of the soul, the aspects of the inner life, and you begin to move it to a higher level to where you can, just like with psychological work today, become fully self-aware of what you're doing. But you do it in such a way that it actually begins to open up a new spiritual organ of perception. What for the etheric life body of the human being is a center of force in the body of energy then begins to open up into the higher bodies to become an actual organ of spiritual perception. But there are particular meditations taught in classical traditions that are the essential foundation for this. They not only give stability, but they also actually literally activate the seed of that energy center in the body so that it blossoms, which is why they're called lotus flowers in the East, so that they become an organ of perception to perceive non-physical worlds. And so with this, you can begin to get a map of exactly what do I actually have in my own physical and subtle bodies that are the seeds for new organs of spiritual perception. And so we provide an overview from different traditions of what these different levels of the subtle body are, what these different energy centers are, some of the most fundamental practices known to multiple traditions that are going to provide the essential foundation for all more advanced work. And then things like, once you begin to open up the organ of perception, what will you perceive? And so, for example, you have to then have some frame of reference for the spiritual beings you perceive, and being able to know which ones are going to be more trustworthy than others, because it's very common that people just open up today in the West, because they have very little frame of reference, to any old non-physical being that's around, and often their guidance is not good. And so,
yeah, that's putting it mildly.
And so we really find that by giving people these essential pieces, this essential context from the classical traditions, but presented in a way that's much more concise and without all the trappings of having to give your power away to anybody or any external group, then people can learn very, very quickly and can make some very quick growth toward what they really want to actualize in their own spiritual potential.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and it, you know, as I got to know you guys better over the weeks that I was there, I just kept thinking, you know, this is such important stuff because we are getting ready to make this transition into the next dimension. And I mean, I pop in and out of stuff like that all the time. So for me, it's like I don't know how it happens; it just happens. You know, mm-hmm. It's not like I try to pop into another dimension. I pretty much enjoy it when I'm in the other place because it's happier than this one. But mm-hmm. but still, it's like, you know, it would be kind of handy to know how to make that happen. And I know the old occult traditions, you know, they had all the rituals that they did and everything else. And I have friends that have done all that stuff. You know, I'm talking the OTO, the Order of the New Dawn, and, you know, mm-hmm. Aleister Crowley stuff. And, you know, everybody's got their own tradition. And I just keep saying, you know, I don't like to follow any one particular thing without checking it within the center of my heart, because I know that that's my connection to the divine. Mm-hmm. I discovered that through all my near-death experiences, so I know that's where you go, and I keep telling people everything you need is within you. You know, and we go do this stuff outside. We go to teachers to help us to understand some of the things that are happening, and also, like I said, to prevent, you know, falling into the various traps and pitfalls that are laid along the way for the unwary. And like I said, I've seen thousands of people get stuck and do terrible things to other people because they thought they were justified. And mm-hmm. you know, I just kind of shake my head and say, "Thank you, God, that I was blessed." You know, had some good teachers,
right.
And you know, you teach so much there. You're such a wealth of information. Oh my gosh, this hour's almost gone. So let's just go briefly into the sacred geometry, holistic healthy homes, and biogeometry, and I'll have you back on again next month, and we'll go more into those. But just a quick overview over the next 10 minutes would be good.
Okay. So let's start with the sacred geometry. Mm-hmm. One thing I became aware of when I was working in the nuclear biological chemical field in the Marine Corps, again, was that what had really happened is that our modern discoveries in these scientific fields were really rediscoveries of things that were known in the ancient world, but were always kept in closed initiation circles. This stuff was not taught to the general public. Like today, every school child gets taught aspects of mathematics, algebra, etc., but mathematics used to be an occult topic. You know, you'd only get that in a particular type of an initiation school. You know, the Pythagorean school or something of that kind. Things we kind of take for granted today, that you learn mathematics or you learn about psychology, these were all parts of the initiation temples of ancient times. And so the same thing is true for understanding what is the actual basis of physical existence. It's all based on a pattern. For a thought form in the mind of God to manifest into the physical world, it has to take on a form. And so sacred geometry is really the study of the patterns of creation, the pattern that's inherent in everything that gives it its state of consciousness, that gives it its functions in the world, all these different aspects of things. So the way that we approach Advaisika, sacred geometry, is that it's a divine language, and it's an alphabet, and you can learn that alphabet one shape at a time. And that's a way it was sometimes taught in the ancient world as well, but that's kind of been forgotten today. And so, for example, if you get a modern textbook such as General Chemistry by Linus Pauling, and you open it up, it's full of diagrams of all the chemical things that make up our world that are the exact same patterns taught in the old Greek school with Platonic and Archimedean solids and things of that kind. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that in the modern technological applications of this, they've lost the spiritual keys to it. They've lost the holistic aspect of what it actually is. And so in the Greek school, you would learn about exactly which shape is connected to which element, what's related to fire, what's related to water, what's related to air. And some of the things I taught were very, very profound. I'll give you one example. And that is that when you looked at the teaching coming from the Greeks, which they themselves said they got from the Egyptian temples, if you look at the writings of Plato, they said there were basically these perfect divisions of the sphere. The sphere is the first form in sacred geometry because every part of its perimeter, of its periphery, is equidistant from its center. And so you find then esoteric groups using the form of the sphere as the first stage of initiation to creating certain types of energetic effects. So, for example, before you do more complex work, if you trained with a particular Greek initiation school, they might have you create a literal sphere of colored light and then send it to a person for healing purposes. Later, that sphere will become more complex forms with other functions. But that sphere is the first form, and then it can be divided in a certain number of ways that we call the Platonic solids that will then focus that energy to manifest different effects in the world. Now, the Greeks would teach publicly four out of the five forms. The one form they would not teach publicly, and that they had to take all these oaths that they'd rather die than reveal it, was one called the dodecahedron. The dodecahedron is a 12-sided object, and every one of the sides is a pentagon. It's five-sided. So the pentagon itself, five-sided object, is very interesting. It's got all types of aspects of energy to it. In the Rosicrucian work, they connect it to the etheric life force that fills up the world. And the dodecahedron itself was said by the Greeks to represent the ether, or the dynamic life force from the life body of God that animates all living things. But they wouldn't teach that one publicly. The closest you get to a public revelation of that one is that in a particular work of Plato's, he said the earth, as seen from above, looks like one of these 12-sided leather balls. But that's the closest he would come to revealing the secret of the dodecahedron. Now, it was later in the 1970s that Russian research, paid for by the Soviet Union, where they would just assign scientists to do this work, wanted to look at what is the essential form of the earth, thinking that the earth had a crystalline form to it. There was a very precise geometry. And they found it was basically based on the form of the dodecahedron. So just like Plato had said, the earth as seen from above looks like a 12-sided leather ball, that was empirically rediscovered by Russian scientists in the 1970s, that there is this type of an earth grid connected to the dodecahedron. But you also had the teachings from the Greeks that the form of the dodecahedron, if it was misused, could unleash tremendous destruction, and so they wouldn't teach it publicly. And so when I was in the nuclear field, I see all these different texts that have declassified information. You can probably find this on the Internet today if you looked it up, about what was the original form of the world's first nuclear weapon. And what you find when you look at these pictures of the world's first nuclear weapon, it looks like the form of a sphere. But then if you take off the outer cladding that makes it look like a sphere, it's a dodecahedron. And they said to make it have the critical reaction that allowed the first nuclear explosion to take place, they had to shape it into those 12 pentagonal faces. The first nuclear weapon was a dodecahedron. And so once you begin to see these links between things, you realize that we have something to learn from these ancient traditions, that they can actually help us to not understand our current state of technology, but how to use it in a healthy way and how to take it to its next level. And as I mentioned a moment ago, this can also be applied for all types of spiritual work, for spiritual development, esoteric healing work. It's kind of the master language. So sacred geometry is very, very important. Now that's a good segue to get into biogeometry. Because sacred geometry is a kind of blanket concept for all the different applications of sacred form in every tradition on the planet. Biogeometry is a very specific body of work coming from a gentleman who I have the highest respect for and great love for, and that's my teacher in the biogeometry work, who is Dr. Ibrahim Karim from Cairo, Egypt. And Dr. Karim is quite unique because he has such a deep level of energetic knowledge, but he's willing to teach it publicly. Most of the time, for example, when you find people selling different types of vibrational or energetic tools, if you ask them, how does it work, they'll just say, well, I can't tell you, it's proprietary. But Dr. Karim is quite unique in that he has an incredibly deep level of energetic knowledge, and he's willing to share it with other people. And so I first found Dr. Karim around the year 2000, and I just realized the level of knowledge that he had. and what he could do. Dr. Karim had already successfully done things at that time, such as he had demonstrated at the Egyptian National Research Center that through the use of simple geometric forms, you could affect the life functions in living beings. He had demonstrated that through the use of particular geometric forms, linear diagrams that he had developed, which show the movement of life energy within the organs of the human body, that he had found through his own energetic research and that he calls biosignatures, that he was able to get better results with people with hepatitis C and the Egyptian National Hepatitis C Research Project than any other pharmaceutical or any other method in the world that was evaluated in that project, better than interferon. And so he had an incredibly deep level of energetic knowledge. And I just basically hung around to the point that he couldn't get rid of me. And so I was very, very fortunate that he allowed me to become the first non-Egyptian instructor in biogeometry, for which I'm very grateful to him. And I then worked with him for a few years to create the standardized format that we could then create a standardized system for training people in North America and elsewhere with a basic foundation training and advanced training in biogeometry. And so in that, we're able to take people step by step through specific methods for testing the energetic field of any person, place, or thing, and then being able to use nature's design language of shape, sound, color, motion, angle, proportion, all of which create very specific energetic effects to energy balance any problem that we're faced with. Even for modern problems such as the toxicity from electromagnetic fields, and also making people aware of things such as the radiation coming from Earth energy lines, which is well known in Germany, but not very well known in North America outside of some dowsing circles. And so in these, what I think are really quite intense, packed weeks of training, there's 1 week for the foundation training, 6 days for the advanced training, we really give people, I think, a huge amount of very concise information that they can practically apply.
Oh, I totally agree. And as you know, I had wow moments every day, but I had that one gigantic oh my God moment where I I was jumping out of my skin and going, my God, I couldn't contain it anymore. I felt like I was going to burst. I had so much joy and love that was radiating out of my heart when I realized what we could do with this stuff. And, you know, the whole thing with the archetype ruler, I was like, oh my God, this is just the most amazing thing I ever heard. And it was such hope that hit me. And I was just so full of this energy, I had to release it. And I talked to some people later, and they said, you know, I was on overwhelm, and I was, like, shutting down. And so when you did that, it, like, released all that. And I said, well, I must have been, you know, kind of gathering everybody's energy, because after that I was able to sit still. But up to that point, I was, like, jumping out of my seat like a little jumping bean. I was just, I mean, I got it. I got the whole picture, and I went, wow, that was just amazing. And the thing that was so interesting too is when I came back and was talking with my friend with the house edition, he said, well, can you check some of these pendants that I picked up from the Whole Life Expo and all this stuff? And I said, sure. And he said, you know, I have asked people, how does this work? You know, what does it do? And he said, half these people, they tell you, I don't know, to do whatever it's going to do for you. And I said, yeah, they don't know what they're doing. So I checked them. And most of the pendants that he had paid quite a bit of money for did not have any of the beneficial energies coming out of them.
And that's very common.
So, yeah, and so then I said, okay, but he said one was a communication device. And I said, well, okay, according to what I've been taught, there's an entity attached. And there were entities attached to a couple of them where we're talking about communication with other dimensions and things. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, now let's test them and see if they're good for you. We already tested and saw that they didn't have any of the good heavenly energy we're looking for, but let's see if they're actually doing something for you. So I tested them, and three of them actually were doing something for him.
Mm-hmm.
I said, okay, but be aware that there's an entity attached to that. And so you don't want it to be a djinn or something like that that can grab a hold of you when you're not paying attention, because that's kind of what happened to this friend of mine that went off the deep end.
One of the things that I find so beneficial with Dr. Karim's work is that it really gives you these practical tools so that you can test the specific vibrational quality of any person, place, or thing. And then once you know what the vibrational quality is, that's what it's going to attract in resonance. That's what it's going to attract in resonance and harmonics. And so you'll have a sense of what actual function it performs. And then there's the aspect, as you mentioned, that you can test for what's the effect for a specific person, either for strengthening or weakening their whole energetic field or for any subcomponent of the field, whether it's an energy center in the body or a specific part of the physical body. And I find that allows us to have such precise information about exactly what the energetic blueprint of anything is and the expected result it's going to have on us, that it becomes such a useful tool to use every day from that point on.
Oh, yeah. I just was blown away by the whole thing, as you know. And I came back and people said, was it really worth it to go out there and stay all that time? And I said, yeah, it was worth every penny and every moment that I spent there.
Well, thank you.
And I, as you know, I had some moments that were quite challenging, and it was kind of boring in between, and still, you know.
Several weeks between the class periods. I appreciated your staying over between the actual class times.
Yeah, it was, well, it was cheaper to stay there than it was to fly back and forth a couple times.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, I'll just work on myself and I'll study this stuff, and so I was glad I did, because it gave me time to do some of the work that I had wanted to be able to do. And so it was well worth it. It was worth every penny and every moment. And I will continue to explain that to people whenever they ask me. So I am going to have you on the show again to talk more about biogeometry and the holistic homes and things like that, because that's such an important subject. And we are pretty much out of time here. So go ahead and give out your website contact information and any classes that you have coming up that people might be interested in.
Great, thank you. Yes, my website is www.vesica.org, and Vesica is V as in Victor, E-S-I-C-A, so vesica.org. And our next upcoming classes is we're offering another foundation training and advanced training in biogeometry that's going to be happening in September, going into October. And, of course, you start with the foundation training, and then you can continue into advanced if you like. And we're also having Dr. Kareem himself come to offer a special topics class for graduates of the advanced training in Asheville, North Carolina, in November. And that's going to start with a public lecture that he's going to be giving in Asheville, North Carolina, on November the 1st. And in addition to that, we do have the online Essential Teachings and Practices of Spiritual Science course that is available. And we also have other courses that will become available in the near future that will be posted on the website.
Well, that is so awesome. When is the next basic training? September what?
I don't have that in front of me, but it's the last week of September is the next foundation training.
Okay, because I have a couple of people that want to go to that.
Oh, good, because I think we have like just 3 or 4 spaces left open, so they should contact us if they're interested.
Okay, I will give them a call and let them know for sure, because they're both architects.
And wonderful.
That'd be perfect for them. And they're both into the metaphysics and healing and all that stuff, too. And so that would be absolutely perfect. So, okay,
great. Cool.
Well, that's about all we've got time for. So thank you so much for being on. And listeners, we have been speaking with Dr. Robert Gilbert of the Vesica Institute at www.vesica.org. That's V-E-S-I-C-A. .org, and it would behoove you to go to that website and check a few things out, trust me. And so thank you so much for being on, Dr. Gilbert. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. All right, listeners, thanks for tuning in, and as usual, until next week, be happy, be healthy, and be who you really are. Nighty-night.